Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Joe Beninati. You're listening to NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off podcast. Here he is. Here's your host, J.J. Regan.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face-Off Podcast. I'm your host, the Capitals correspondent, J.J. Regan. With me today, he is the Capitals insider. He's the Lane Kiffin to my Nick Saban. He's Tarik El-Bashir. Tarik?
You're running out of material, man. You're going to SEC football references, although I kind of dig that one. I mean, that one was actually funny.
Well, we will talk
Saban's about- a bad dude, man.
But Saban may be the best.
He's pretty good at his job.
Pretty good coach.
And Kiffin, he's a knucklehead.
Kiffin's for sure a knucklehead. What we will talk about today, it's the Mailbag Podcast. You take the time to ask us questions, so we take the time to answer them. This week, you wrote to us about Ovechkin's drive for next season, the Caps going overseas, NHL expansion, and more. So let's start with Amelia Byrne. She writes, "No matter what opinion people have on the intros, it's worth it just because they drive Tarik insane." Thank you, Amelia.
I used to like you, Amelia.
"My biggest question for next season is how winning the Cup will affect Ovi's game going forward. Clearly, he got a great return on all the changes he made to his offseason training last year, and now he has a burden lifted from his shoulders. Knowing his drive, I don't expect him to just coast at this point. What are your thoughts?"
I hope that this has inspired him to push himself to even greater heights. And Rob Carlin said this a moment ago on another podcast, and we've heard Alan May say it, winning the Stanley Cup is intoxicating. Once you have a taste of it, you want to do it again and again and again. And what I hope Todd Reirden is able to drive home with the core guys on this team, the fact that Braden Holtby, Nick Backstrom, Alex Ovechkin, I mean, you look at those three guys right there, and John Carlson, Matt Niskanen, these guys are all under contract for together for two more years. They kind of messed around the first dozen, you know, and didn't quite get the job done. They just got their first cup. I hope they feel like they got to get greedy here to kind of make up for lost time. They have to go get another one here in the next year or two to really solidify and kind of make people forget about those first decade where they kept coming up short. If they win another cup, I know next year that's going to be tough. I mean, coming back on a short off season. I mean, when you see what the Penguins did the previous 2 years, it makes you really. I mean, it's July 3rd and we're still working. I mean, you know, it's hard on everyone in the organization.
Yeah, my wife is well aware.
Yeah, you know, it's a very short turnaround, and to see what the Penguins were able to do, and any team that's gone back to back, it's amazing. That said, the Caps need to get another one here in the next couple of years, and if they're able to, I think that makes everyone forget about those first 10 disappointing years of the Nick Backstrom, Alex Ovechkin era.
Yeah, the Stanley Cup, I think, can have one of two effects on a player. He can either say, "Hey, I did it. I reached the pinnacle," and maybe he takes the foot off the gas
a little bit. That's not him.
Not Alex Ovechkin. The second effect is, boy, that was awesome. I want to do that again. And Ovechkin can see how much of an effect the change in his training had last season and come back again ready to go. But I think Ovechkin is the second type of player.
But he's one of 23.
That's true.
The question is, how does everyone else come back, especially the youngsters who, you know, there's some guys, let's be honest, there's some guys who just won it in their first year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can be hard.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking around going, "This is how it is every year?
This is easy.
This is easy." Yeah. You know, how are those guys going to train this summer? How are they going to come back next year? I hope Alex is calling and texting and, you know, getting on those young guys and go, "Listen, guys, it took me 13 years to get to this point. Let's try to do it again. You know, don't take it for granted. Don't go out there and party too much. Let's double down and try to get this done again."
Next up, Paul Oxley. He writes,
"Hey, Paul.
Since it's even more difficult to repeat as a cup champion than it is to win the first one, what do you think the Caps need to do to avoid a cup hangover?"
Well, they've already avoided a cup hangover in terms of keeping their roster together, which is totally amazing to me that last year they had a cup hangover without the cup and lost a lot of good players and didn't have, from a roster standpoint, their best offseason. It wasn't Brian McClellan's best work.
Right.
But this has been his best work this year, I think, keeping everyone together. It's amazing. I mean, some guys are taking less. They're leaving money on the table to come back. That is a result of winning the cup, of keeping Todd Reirden, keeping that continuity going. And they might even have some money left over after signing Tom Wilson to go get something.
Yeah, how often do we say that?
That's amazing. That is amazing job that McClellan and his crew have done managing the cap. And I think that, in terms of, you know, avoiding that hangover, I think that's really going to help having that same group come back. And I also think making a change at the highest reaches of that locker room, bringing in a new head coach. I think Todd Reirden, he's been around a long time. He knows he's got to have some positive friction and throw some things at the guys at the start of the year to keep them engaged and make sure they're hungry and wanting to do this again, because it'd be very easy to bring this whole group back. And like you said, everyone's kind of fat and happy, and, you know, it seems like it's easy now because they just did it. I think Reardon's going to have some challenges. He's going to throw some things at them to kind of keep them engaged and energized and hungry.
Yeah, they're in a unique position for a Stanley Cup champion, and that they're going to have a new head coach starting next season.
It's a new head coach, but it's the same.
Right, but you know what I mean, that instead of the old band's coming back together.
I think it's enough newness. You know what I mean? Like it's enough continuity, but it's also enough newness to kind of keep everyone on their toes a little
bit. I think it's a good balance there. That's exactly right. I mean, this isn't like the Vancouver Canucks, who tried to keep the band together for years and years and years after they were over the hill, and everyone's going, "What are you doing? Rebuild this team."
And they still didn't win the cup.
And they still didn't win. But
they got Jay Beagle.
This is a team that has Ovechkin, who's seemingly ageless. They have young stars and Evgeny Kuznetsov. They've kept the band together. They have their top four on defense locked in, and you should be excited. They could make some noise again next season.
And they're starting Golden.
Next up, Joe Olszewski.
Hey, Joe.
Sorry for butchering that name, because I'm sure I did.
Wouldn't be the first time.
It's easy to forget how bad last season got, and I'm wondering how this team, keeping almost everyone from last year, is going to do, especially with a new coach. Did this team flat out figure out how to win together, or just figure out how to win in the playoffs?
That's a very deep statement / question, Joe. I gotta think about that one, but I think both. I think, and I said this throughout the run, there have been more talented teams in Washington.
Yes,
there by far. We've seen it. You know, the previous year when they had Marcus Johansson and Justin Williams, I mean, that was a stacked team, and Carl Alsner. Sometimes the best teams are the teams where everyone's pulling on the rope at the same time in the same direction with the right amount of force, and it takes having guys in different roles and in the right roles. Not too many guys, you know, in over their heads, not too many guys maybe playing down a little bit, just having everyone in the right spot. And that's what you saw this year with this Capitals team. And I think that they learned to win together, which is the first part of your statement / question. And I think part two was they also figured out how to get it done when the chips are down in the playoffs. And I think there's going to be some component next year of let's just speed through the tedium of the regular season and get to the part that really matters. The good thing is now they know how to win when they get to the good part that really matters.
I think this team already knew how to win together. The problem was that they didn't know how to win in the playoffs. I think that was the difference. So I'm definitely going with the second part of your question there. I think they figured out how to win in the playoffs, and that was the difference. And every person in this team figured out how to win, including Barry Trotz, who made his share of mistakes beforehand, but I thought was a completely different coach in this postseason. So unless it was Todd pulling the strings. So we'll see how Todd approaches that. We've got plenty more of your questions, but first, a quick break. Welcome back. Moving on to Greg Christian. He's looking at the Caps' depth. He wants to know, how do you think the Caps are looking at fourth line center and third defensive pair going into next season?
Let me start off by saying Greg Christian is the most consistent of our podcasting emailers.
Yes.
Every single, yep. I love it. I love consistency. As a person on this podcast, I like knowing that I can count on Greg every single week. I know what I'm going to get from him day in and day out. Now to his question, he asked about the third pairing. We addressed this in a previous podcast, and I do feel some trepidation. I do sense some hesitance on the Capitals' part to have Madison Bowie and Christian Juice as a full-time third pair. I do think they want to see if Brooks Orpik will come back. I think an ideal situation for this team would be Brooks Orpik coming back on a team-friendly deal where he can use some of that veteran experience and bring along a guy like Madison Bowie. Let's say he plays 40 games and Bowie plays 40 games and Bowie can learn from one of the best to ever do it, but also mitigate some of those hard miles. I mean, Orpik, I think, is going to be 38 at some point next season. And the other question was up front. What it was?
Fourth line center.
Look, they've got options, and that's what they were hoping for. Greg, I could see Chandler Stephenson filling that role. Travis Boyd just signed a 2-year, $800,000 extension. One way, if you're paying someone $800,000 to play in the National Hockey League or in the American Hockey League, which is what a one-way deal guarantees, he's going to be playing in the National Hockey League. So you've got two options there, and then they also signed a 28-year-old named Nick Dowd, no K, just N-I-C, Dowd. Don't feel bad if you have to look him up. I did too. He's been around a little bit. Played a lot in Vancouver last year. He can play on the wing. Right-handed shot, right-handed draw, obviously. Can play on the wing, but can also play center. And right there, I mean, that's three guys who, depending on how Reardon decides to construct his bottom six, could fill that fourth role. It might even be by committee. Wouldn't surprise me if Boyd and Dowd end up playing a decent amount there.
While Tarik was off gallivanting on TV, Brian McClellan told the media that he likes Chandler Stephenson on the wing. He thinks he's better on the wing. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him at center at some point, but I think wing would be the plan there.
I'll tell you, the thing that the coaches like about Stephenson on the wing, well, there's a couple things to like about a center who can also play wing is, yes, if someone does get tossed out of the faceoff circle, exactly, you now have a faceoff guy who can, he's taken 1,000 draws in his life and he can go in there and win a draw. And that's so important in today's game, starting a play with possession. But also, Stephenson has that versatility where he can play center. He sees the ice like a center, but he's got the ruggedness and toughness to win board battles. And Boyd, I think, tries really, really hard to win those board battles, but he's just not that big. Steven's got a little more weight to him, a little more thickness, a little more height. So in that way, I think that does make Stephenson, that lends him to being slightly better suited physically, being a wing. And you remember, this kind of is going down a little bit of a rabbit hole, but remember the World Cup in Toronto a couple of years ago? Remember Canada's gold medal winning team?
Yes.
Almost every single forward on that team
was a
center.
Yeah.
And they just were told, hey, you're righty, so you're playing right wing because John Tavares is your center. and you're a lefty, so I know you're a center, but you're going to play left wing because John Tavares is your center. I mean, that's just kind of how it worked. And I think that might have opened some eyes to people around the hockey world that, you know what, it's pretty good to have young players come up as centers and then you can kind of move them around a little bit.
I know a lot of people had Nick Dowd penciled in for Hershey, but I will say this.
No way, $650 on a one-way deal?
He has a one-way deal.
That's a lot of chocolate, man. He ain't going to Hershey.
That, to me, tells me that they have some sort of plan for him at the NHL level.
He's also on the NHL roster. He's already been assigned number 17. Mm-hmm. When you sign a player to an NHL deal and you put him immediately onto your website, look, this is not the end-all and be-all, but his name and number were on the website within 24 hours. That means there have been some guarantees and some assurances that he's going to be an NHL player.
I think they had a similar approach to Anthony Peluso, but that didn't work out.
Well, he played his way out of a spot. At least let you know where they are thinking.
That's a fair point.
I mean, all you have to do, guys, honestly, Greg and everyone out there listening, if you want to know where a player is going to fit into the roster next year, look at how much money he makes. It's very, very easy. $3 million, $4 million players are going to be on the third line or higher. $2 million players are going to be on the third line or lower. If you're on a one-way deal, you are playing in the National Hockey League next year because they are not sending your butt to Hershey so you can buy $650,000 worth of chocolate in Hershey. You are going to be in the National Hockey League.
That's absolutely right. And the third defensive pair is going to be some sort of some sort of a cycle. I don't think they want to have Juice and Bowie for 82 games, as you said, Tarek. If it's not Orpik, they're going to bring in some veteran who can cycle in and out of the lineup. Moving on to Eddie. Eddie has a few questions.
What's up, Eddie?
He writes, in the near future, are the Capitals going to do the global series in Europe somewhere, like Sweden or Finland? For us European fans, that could be the only way to see the whole team play.
Yes. The answer to that is yes, it is going to happen. I don't know where it's going to be, but I'm looking forward to it because August and September around D.C. kind of sucks in terms of weather. If you guys know me, I'm one of the sweatiest humans on earth, and I look for every excuse to get out of D.C. in the summertime. But yes, they are going to. I mean, I would say the leading candidate, obviously, would be something in Russia.
Yeah.
I would say the second leading candidate would be somewhere in Sweden. And
you think so? Because I have a different country in mind.
And also, Ted Leonsis has gone out of his way to build alliances and business relationships with companies that are in China.
Yeah.
There are billions of people in China. You know what that means? There is untapped potential in terms of hockey players, in terms of dollar bills, in terms of sponsors, in terms of fans. Remember, the NBA did this with Yao Ming years ago, and the National Hockey League is starting to kind of eye that part of the world. And why not? Most of the world lives in that part over there. You want to tap into some of that money and some of that manpower. And people have called me crazy, but I wouldn't be surprised. Seeing the way the game is growing over there, I wouldn't be surprised to see a first-round draft pick come out of Shanghai in 20 years. They have their minds set to being players in, you know, a global player in hockey, and they have shown in other arenas that when China puts their mind to something, they do it, and they do it quickly.
Yeah, which is why if you're upset about the NHL not being in the Pyeongchang Olympics, don't worry, because they're going to be in Beijing. I would be shocked if they let that opportunity pass. But I don't think that helped you out, Eddie, because you wanted them to come to Europe. China may be a bit of a hike for you. Eddie also wants to know, should the NHL consider making an All-Star Weekend in Europe as they are trying to build a stronger fan base there?
So look, Eddie, I understand you live in Europe and you want to see some NHL hockey over there, but the All-Star Game wouldn't work on the other side of the pond for a couple of reasons. Number one, players who have been selected to the All-Star Game don't even want to go when it's in New Jersey, when it's like right down the road.
Right.
They want a break. They want to let their bodies rest. They want to say hello to their wives and their other family members. They don't want to do it. It's a bit of a burden. I know it's kind of counterintuitive. It should be an honor to play in that game, but especially for the guys who've done it now a couple of years, 3-4 years, and let's be honest, the guys who are selected to the All-Star Game, once you're an All-Star, you got to play your way off the All-Star Game. It kind of becomes a yearly ritual for a lot of guys.
Right.
They don't look forward to it. It's a grind. They want a little bit of a break, and by asking them to fly across the pond, I mean, that would exacerbate the problem.
Yeah,
and I think you'd get more pushback. The Players Association would never agree to that. So,
yeah,
sorry, Eddie.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a non-starter right there, because you're absolutely right. One more question, but first, a quick break. Welcome back. Tarek, our last question is from Nathan Springer, and he is a bit mad at the NHL. He writes, why does the NHL insist on adding more teams while not doing anything to fix or move the Coyotes, Senators, and Panthers, all of whom are failing in their current locations? And why won't the NHL consider moving the Coyotes or Panthers to Canada or adding more teams in Canada? We can't even get the NHL to hold draft, all-star game, or awards show in Canada. Why does the NHL treat Canada so badly, given that that is where the most passionate fans are and where hockey was invented?
You know, that's a very complex question. But like with anything in pro sports, the answer almost always lies in dollar bills. It's almost always money. And
that was my first thought, too.
Yeah. So why isn't hockey in Quebec City? Because they probably don't have the requisite amount of corporate sponsorship lined up. I mean, anyone who's been to Canada or been to Quebec City or been to Montreal knows there are definitely enough people, enough fans to fill up that arena 10 times. The question is, will they be able to get the corporate sponsorship dollars that are essential to making an operation, a franchise, viable, you know, by buying suites and putting signs on the boards? I think if there were enough money in Quebec City, they have the Videotron Center. I mean, it's a beautiful arena. There would be a team there. I think also something that comes into the equation, and this is starting to step a little bit out of my knowledge base, but I'm pretty sure that Canadian teams still pay their players in American dollars.
Yes, they do.
But they make their money in Canadian dollars. And that exchange rate's not always very friendly to the Canadian team. They also travel to the lower 48 a lot for their business purposes, because that's where the Capitals and the other American-based teams are, obviously. And they're paying, again, at hotels in American dollars. It makes it a big challenge for teams that don't have that enormous capital in terms of the corporate sponsors backing them up, like the Maple Leafs, like, you know, the Canadiens, like even, you know, Edmonton. I remember writing a story for the New York Times years and years ago. I want to say way back in maybe 1998. There was actually a welfare system in the NHL to support the Canadian teams because of the exchange rate. The exchange rate was so bad that they actually had to get money from the well-heeled NHL teams based in the U.S., like the Rangers and other big city teams, Los Angeles, to help kind of even up the bottom line for some of those Canadian teams. So whenever you have a question about why something isn't going the way you think it should in pro sports, follow the dollars. It's always money. Yeah. Always 100 times out of 100, it's money.
The salary cap grew this year to a large degree, but for the last few years, it was very slow. And for everyone wondering why, the answer I kept getting from reporters was there was concern over the Canadian dollar. And so if you have a chance to get $650 million from an American team to expand or add another franchise into Canada, I think that's a no-brainer for Gary Bettman to try to expand into Seattle, which we see there. And that makes perfect sense to me. I do admit I'm confused with the NHL's stance on Arizona. I don't know why they've dug their heels in.
Hard-headed.
They're
stubborn
certainly
at this point.
I don't know how many ways they could tell you that that's not working before they decide, oh, hey, maybe this isn't working. But I don't know what's going on there. The Senators are a dumpster fire.
Hot mess.
They're dumpster fire.
And there's more that's going to come out. And just as a heads up.
There's more that's going to come out. The problem there is that I know everyone wants Eugene Melnyk gone, and now we're getting way into the weeds. I know everybody wants Eugene Melnyk gone, but if he's gone, chances are that team's not staying in Ottawa, and that's something the NHL doesn't want to see.
If I'm the NHL, the thing that I'm most concerned about is the fact that you've got a team that plays in Ontario that can't fill its building. It's a big building, but it can't fill its building. I know it's also not in downtown.
Yeah, they need to put it downtown.
It's way out in Kanata, but the fact that you are in literally the mecca of hockey and people aren't coming to your playoff games, that's got to be very, very concerning.
That's a problem. And the Panthers, I don't think we need two teams in Florida, admittedly. But
you know why you need two teams in Florida? To give the guys a break from the cold when they go down there. Literally,
the reason
that there will always be a Florida Panthers and a Tampa Bay Lightning is the Snowbirds. There are enough Northerners who have relocated down there. You just need them to be good. They aren't coming there when they're bad. When those teams are good, those buildings are, I shouldn't say full, but I remember a couple of championship runs that fell short with the Panthers, but that place, South Florida, went nuts for that team.
And let's also
remember the rats on the ice.
It gets
crazy when they're winning. But you see that with the other teams, the Miami Dolphins. You know the what are they? Miami Marlins. What are they called now?
Yeah, the Miami.
Miami Marlins. I mean, when you're not winning, no one gives a you know what.
Yeah. Going back to your point about the Snowbirds, there's a reason why all the Canadian teams are in the same division with the two Florida teams, rather than Florida and Tampa Bay being in the division, like at another southeast division.
I always get a trip out of driving on 95 down to the Outer Banks every summer, and how many Quebec plates and Ontario plates you pass on the road. You literally pass more Canadian plates than you do like New Jersey plates on the way to the Outer Banks. It's crazy.
So to answer your question, there's concerns about the Canadian dollar. The team, there are definitely teams that I think could stand to be moved, like Arizona, but they've dug their heels on that. And you know what? Now that Austin Matthews is from Arizona, they're going to point to him and say, look, there's no Austin Matthews if we don't have a team in Arizona. So I think they're still going to fight for that franchise. But so sorry, we can't give you a more conclusive answer there. If you want to have your question read and answered on the next Mailbag Podcast, you can send it in to capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, you can subscribe anywhere podcasts are available, and be sure to give us a good rating and review. Those things really do matter to help spread the word about the show. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. For Tarik Al-Bashir, this is JJ Regan.
Now let's get the puck out of here.